You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts its money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. It's a midweek Wednesday edition of the program, which is always rock solid. Mark Lawrence will join us. We're talking football with Playbook.com's Mark Lawrence, college and NFL football. Emery Hunt joins us. FootballGamePlan.com's Emery Hunt joins us. We're talking college and NFL football with Emery Hunt. The raging redhead Cam Stewart returns. Will join me in the studio. We'll talk Ryder Cup and NFL football. So we've got you covered. Another big week in the world of college football and professional football. So without further ado, let's jump right in to the fact that here we are. We're 3 weeks in to the National Football League regular season, and I think it's safe to say there's more than a couple of coaches who are already in the hot seat. And in fact, there are a couple of coaches that are a loss away from being in the electric chair. Now, Rex Ryan and the Buffalo Bills beat down the Arizona Cardinals last week, 33-18, a win that I did not see coming. And Rex Ryan, he got the phone call from the governor. Governor Cuomo called, not yet, as Rex Ryan lives to fight another week. Unfortunately for him, he gets the New England Patriots this week. Yet Rex will get through the season, whether it be the coach of the Bills next year, that's another story. Chuck Pagano. Now, the odds makers think Pagano is one of the top choices to get fired. And Chuck Pagano probably could have gotten fired if they didn't beat the San Diego Chargers, which they did, which they should have. You know, the Indianapolis Colts are beaten down. I get it. You got a ton of injuries, but so do the San Diego Chargers. If Chuck Pagano didn't win that game, it wouldn't surprise me if he would have gotten fired. Yet they got a winnable game this week, and the Colts can get right back on track. Oh, yeah, J.J. Watt's injured right now. Houston, you know, it's a winnable division for all these piece-of-crap teams in that division. So, Chuck Pagano, you get to hang around a little bit. People always talk about McCoy getting fired in San Diego. With all the injuries that they have, and let's be honest, the Chargers don't do anything ever about anything. Like, you know, they don't ever sign anybody good. They don't want to pay their draft picks. You know, they don't like hiring coaches. They don't like firing coaches. You know, the Chargers are just sort of there. You know, they're there. You know, but McCoy's going to be there. McCoy isn't getting canned anytime soon. The guy that will be the first coach to get fired, and it's probably going to happen, I would imagine, on Sunday night or Monday after they lose to the Indianapolis Colts, if they do, and it's Gus Bradley of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, Gus Bradley, unbelievably putrid numbers. Now, we're into like 3.5 seasons here with Bradley. Well, not 3.5, 3.25, etc. Dude's won 12 games. You know, I just read a number. I think it was Pro Football Talk that came up with the number. The number actually was going all the way back to 1936. Minimum 50 games coached in the National Football League. The dude's got the second worst winning percentage since 1936. His winning percentage is 235. 235. The Jacksonville Jaguars actually have some players, too. They actually have some talent. Gus Bradley, you know, you're in the electric chair and the governor ain't going to be calling anytime soon. Yet I'm not sure it's Gus Bradley's fault that Blake Bortles is a freaking interception machine. You know, he makes Ryan Fitzpatrick look cautious with the football. And Bortles has been in the league long enough now that, you know, I don't know. Is he really the next Ben Roethlisberger like everybody was always saying he was going to be, including myself? Or is he really just like, I don't know, the next Jay Cutler? Or maybe even worse, as he appears to be right now. But is it Gus Bradley's fault? Hey, the buck stops with the coach, as the cliche goes. So maybe they should tell that to Bruce Arians. Now, I tell you, I used to be the charter president of the Bruce Arians fan club. And speaking of Chuck Pagano, the Colts were never better than when Arians took over when Pagano was sick. Arians, you know, was a great coach, still a solid coach. But the fact of the matter is Arizona Cardinal team is falling apart right now. And Bruce Arians makes news this week. And, oh, there's the coach Arians for publicly ridiculing the long snapper. So the long snapper, the Cardinals had a bad snap on a field goal, led to Buffalo Bill points. So Arians blames the loss on the long snapper. Not only cuts the dude, but then says after the fact, he needs to grow up. I don't know. You're a 63-year-old man. You're telling someone else that they need to grow up? The guy made a mistake. He knows he made a mistake. I watched that game. I had money on that game, coach. And I got to tell you something. That long snapper didn't cost you that game against the Buffalo Bills. Was it the long snapper's fault that you guys gave up 208 yards to the Bills? Was that the long snapper's fault? Was it the long snapper's fault that Carson Palmer was just completely useless? Was that the long snapper's fault? Is it the long snapper's fault that you guys are giving up 133 yards a game on the ground? Is that the long snapper's fault? Was it the long snapper's fault that you guys got beat down worse than CM Punk did against the Carolina Panthers and choked and quit and waved a flag? Hey, coach, was that the long snapper's fault? You know, it's pretty clear that Bruce Arians is not on the hot seat. But I guarantee you, he's starting to feel this Arizona desert heat. But much like Brian Kelly in Notre Dame, can't be his fault, not my fault. It's the kid's fault. It's the coordinator's fault. It's the long snapper's fault. I think it's time some of these coaches took a look in the freaking mirror. Game time decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game time decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network continues. We are live. The Raging Redhead, Cam Stewart, will join me in studio in a couple of moments. Emery Hunt's going to join us. We're going to talk some college and NFL football with Emery. But let's kickstart the program with Mark Lawrence, playbook.com's Mark Lawrence, also one of the cover's experts. Mark, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Hey, Gabe, as always, my pleasure to be on board with you as well. Thank you.
So, Mark, I know it's an emotional week in South Florida, which has been your longtime home. So you're right there in the middle of this with the passing of Jose Fernandez. Been a very, very emotional week, hasn't it?
Tremendously emotional. We did a podcast this morning ourselves, and I kind of got caught up in it a little bit, just given the fact that we're down here in South Florida, where there's obviously, as you know, a lot of Cubans that populate the area down here. He was a Cuban and extremely well liked, and just the hair raised on my hands when D. Gordon jacked that home run in a tribute to him. Just watching the emotion and the memory of everybody down here has just really brought the community together.
Yeah, it really was an amazing moment, and I think it hit home more after he hit the home run than I think it did on Sunday morning when people found out that he passed away. You know, there was NFL football. It's Sunday. People are out. People hear about it. They're like, oh, that's terrible. But D. Gordon hitting that home run, it was just sort of the finality of it all. And, you know, one of the most emotional sports moments I've ever seen in my life.
I think it was Bob Nightingale, USA Today, called it the greatest home run ever in Major League Baseball. And I would agree with that. I know there was a Kirk Gibson shot and, you know, other Carlton Fisk home runs and things like that. But just the situation being what it was, who hit the home run. And as you say, a day after it all happened, when the world was centered on the NFL on Sunday, and then the Miami Marlins had their day on Sunday, and it was just really, really wonderful to see.
Yeah, it's a tragedy, a real, real tragedy. But as I stated earlier in the week, it just, you know, it doesn't matter how much money you have or how old you are, Mark. None of us are here forever. We have to enjoy the time that we're here.
And you know what the other sad part of the matter is also, Gabe, is he was just coming into a big, big contract year. I mean, he never made any money like he could have and should have. He would have been a zillionaire had he, you know, been playing here next year. But he didn't. The unfortunate thing is he's going to leave a young baby girl on Earth here in his memory, and you know that'll be just terrific to have that situation occur.
Yeah, you know it's you know it's true. Like I said, all life is equal, but it's really unbelievable for this guy, a 24-year-old, and everyone's talking about Bryce Harper getting a $500 million contract. I know that Fernandez's agents were talking about they wanted a contract in a similar range, actually. So yeah, completely tragic all around it. Yeah, how about the fact that his start got moved back a day, Mark, and he wouldn't have been on the boat?
Like, unbelievable that, you know, a couple of ball players were invited to be on that boat, but they couldn't partake because they were going to play early the next day. So, you know, it spared their life in that sense. And the question I have to ask you is there room in the Hall of Fame for a pitcher with the numbers that he put up in the short span that he pitched?
That's a very interesting, that's a good question. You know, I don't think they're ruthless, these guys, you know, with their, you know, they're worse than traffic cops. They're worse than a Florida State trooper, you know what I mean? Like, you know, with the radar gun. I don't know. You know, there should be almost a special wing in memoriam, though, type of thing. Because, yeah, you know, like I said, too, I was talking with Dave Olinsky about this. I don't really know if there was an athlete in his prime as good. People brought up Sean Taylor, you know, former, you know, you, another guy in South Florida. People brought up Sean Taylor. I was talking about Len Bias, but Len Bias wasn't an NBA star yet. Hank Gathers, leading scorer in NCAA basketball, has a heart attack on the court. But he wasn't a star in the NBA yet. I can't really think of an athlete. I mean, people talking about Thurman Munson. You know, maybe Thurman Munson's the closest comparable thing to this.
Or Roberto Clemente, you know.
Or Roberto Clemente going back a ways, yep.
Exactly. But, you know, his numbers were Bob Gibson-type numbers, you know, for the short time that he did pitch in Major League Baseball. Nobody dominated at home like he did in his career. So it's, you know, it's a subject that will make for obviously good press, somebody to write an article about. But all in all, tip of the hat to the Marlins and the great tribute they did to him.
That's an interesting question. So I can tell, yeah, you were deeply moved by this, because normally you're all business, Mark,
yes.
about the games. But I can tell you are rattled as far as the passing of Jose Fernandez. But may he rest in peace. So let's talk about Notre Dame and Syracuse. We had a big tailgate party planned. Fantasy Sports Network. We had Irish bands. This game with Notre Dame and Syracuse, they didn't announce the start time because they were basically, it might be prime time. It might, depending on what Notre Dame's record is. Well, Notre Dame are 1-3. They made the game a noon start, and our tailgate's ruined. It's supposed to be 3 hours before the game with a band and everything. No one wants to go watch a 1-3 football team and get drunk at 7 in the morning in a parking lot of MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. Mark, like, I got to tell you, Notre Dame are the biggest bust of the entire college football landscape, in my opinion. Would you agree with that?
I think this season, for sure, they are, Gabe. They're the team that's disappointed the most. So much was expected from this team. And, you know, the truth be known, if they don't get their acting together here, and then they don't have a walkover here with Dino Babers' football team, he can really keep his foot on the pedal, and this will be generally a high-scoring football game. If they don't get their act together here, we could be talking about the former Brian Kelly head coach at Notre Dame.
Yeah, so he throws Van Gorder's under the bus, and okay, that's okay, but it's not Van Gorder's who's sticking with Kaiser. It's not Van Gorder's who recruited the kids. It's never really Kelly's fault, though. It's always the player's fault. It's always the assistant's fault. It's, you know, the special teams coach's fault. As you stated, the honeymoon's clearly over in South Bend right now, because, you know, I do a radio hit, ESPN New Hampshire, and they're all Irish guys, shocking, out of Boston, right? So, you know, they're all Irish guys, and they want Kelly's head on a platter right now. Like, they feel like, you know, that he gets a free pass too much, and he really has gotten a free pass. But I did an intro off the top, man. The buck stops with the coach, Mark.
It does. It, you know, and in fact, what's ironic about this whole thing here, Gabe, is the fact that when he first came to Notre Dame back in 2010, what did they do? They started the same way, the same fashion, at 1-3, and they barely made it into the Sun Bowl that year. They end up going 8-5 out, but the Sun Bowl, I think he'd take right now if you had to ask him that question.
Well, I tell you what, you know, Syracuse's win isn't going to raise any eyebrows last week against UConn, but I think it's an impressive win. You and I both know, man, Storrs is a tough place to go up there and play. A nice road win for Syracuse. They've had a relatively tough schedule. They had to deal with Louisville out of the gate, but as you stated, this Dino Babers offense, they're going to keep coming at you. They're going to keep running plays. They're not going to quit, and they're not shedding any tears for the Irish, Mark, like you know. And I think Babers probably thinks, you know what, this is a game that my kids might be able to win. This would be my big first signature win. Imagine how big this win is for Babers going back to the campus.
It's got to be huge. You know, he opened up the season 3 in a row at home, took that pacing against Louisville, which everybody has so far this year, went on the road, won their first true road game at Connecticut. Like you say, tough to win at Storrs. I think they go into this football game with a lot of confidence here, especially with Notre Dame reeling as they are right now.
Getting 10.5, so you're leaning with the dog here.
Yes, I am.
All right, Wisconsin and Michigan, big, huge game is the Wisconsin Badgers. You know, Mark, what do you think of this analogy? The Wisconsin Badgers are the Minnesota Vikings of college football. Like, they just win. Yeah, they get no respect. Midwest team. So, who's their quarterback? Who's their running back? They're not flashy. I don't know about those guys. They can't win again. Yet the Badgers just keep cashing tickets, man.
And it's probably a, you know, you could say it's a Paul Chryst thing. Perhaps it was a, what was there, Brett Bielema type thing. But they do keep winning football games in undramatic, non-flashy fashion, do the Badgers here. But let me ask you this question. Who has a tougher three-game road slate than does Wisconsin? They're off Michigan State. They're going to the Big House against Michigan this week, and they've got Ohio State next week. That's a three-game gauntlet that if they can win two of these three football games, I think we'll find them playing on New Year's Day this year.
Yeah, they sweep the board, put them in a national championship game.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah, you know, but, you know, so listen, 2 weeks ago, I jumped on Sparty against the Irish. I cashed the ticket. Last week, I was thinking, you know, it's a flat spot, man. Flat spot for Michigan State. I got to take Wisconsin. Yet I fell for the trap that the odds maker set for me. I was like Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. She set the trap and he walked right into it. I was like, oh, how do I not take Sparty at 3 at kickoff, Mark? And well, I found out why I shouldn't have taken Sparty at 3. But now it's like, are Michigan for real? Michigan are winning by an average like 38 points. They're killing teams. And I think Michigan are for real. But it's double digits against this Badger team that keeps covering. What do you do with this one?
This is tricky here, Gabe, because if you look at what Michigan's done this year, aside from impressing, putting up 45 or more points in every game, they've also held all four opponents to season low yardage marks this year. So they're doing it defensively, and impressively defensively are the Wolverines. I think they get Wisconsin in the right spot here, though, after tripping up the Spartans last week. This could be a nice spot for Michigan here. I'm usually a big, huge underdog lover and advocate, and I don't want to really step in front of Wisconsin, but this is the dog I'll let go this week.
And for the record, Mark Lawrence's database, information like this, you can read at playbook.com. It's a must read. Michigan teams that are playing their fifth straight, open up with five straight home games, playing in game 5-0 against the spread if they scored more than 35 the week before. Last week was their first test, and they blasted Penn State. Michigan, solid team. Tennessee and Georgia, another situation here where I want to take Georgia. I looked at this, I'm like, I want to take Georgia, but yeah, they're not quite ready. Eh? They're not Bulldogs. They're Bull Pups right now. They're not quite ready for this, are they?
No, they're not. This is not the Georgia Bulldog football team that we've come to admire in the past. I don't know if it's because Mark Richt is gone, a new regime is in there right now at Georgia, but they're simply not playing good football, Gabe. They've been out-yarded their last two football contests in a row. Even the win against Missouri, they gave up 485 yards in the contest. They coughed up 510 yards last week, and now Nick Chubb might not play this football game. I don't know how you can get to Georgia this week. This is a huge potential letdown spot for Tennessee. There's no question about that, especially off that huge emotional comeback win to Florida. But it's tough to back the Bulldogs here. I think you have to play the points or not play the football game. I will not be playing the football game.
Yeah, you know what? I'm leaning towards not playing this either, actually. Like I said, I can't convince myself with Georgia, but I don't want to be laying points with a volatile Tennessee team off that emotional win, like you said. All right, let's get to, I don't know, we've been around a long time, you and I, Mark, so how many games of the centuries have there been?
one a month, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Game of the century. You know, it was funny, actually. The one when I hear the game of the century actually sticks out to me, and it sticks, is I remember years ago when FSU went up there to South Bend.
Oh, yeah.
Florida State went to South Bend. It was the time that Florida State's kids all got popped for, like, the stolen jackets and all that. But that was, like, you know, it was Bowden and Holtz, and you know, there was one of the games of the century, but here we go again.
I was at that game, too, by the way, Gabe.
No kidding. You were at that game.
Yes, I remember seeing O.J. Simpson on the sidelines as a sideline reporter during the football game.
That's right, on NBC. It's unbelievable. I bring that game up. Yeah.
Yes, right.
Yeah, that's right. And Notre Dame blasted them, right?
Yes, they did.
Yeah, Notre Dame blasted them. All right, so we got the 2016 version of the game of the century. That is unless Louisville wins and they play Houston later in the season and they're both undefeated. But we got Louisville and Clemson. Clemson plus 2, total 67.5. Mark, what's your take on this tilt?
I'm telling you how I'm looking at this game, Gabe. When we did the newsletter, we start Sunday night with the newsletter, and we take sides if we see opening lines. And my first observation was, okay, Louisville comes in here a dog, playing as good or better than any team in the country here. Let's make the Louisville case. The next day, what happens to the contest? It goes to Louisville favorite in the football game. They go from 2.5 dog to 2 favorite in the game. So suddenly we get to put a different hat on and take a look at value in the contest, value being to Clemson here, a team that all they've done is win 35 of the last 37 home games. And in fact, if you take Florida State out of the equation, they're 33-1 at home against everybody that's not named Florida State is Clemson. And you've also got here, I think, in their favor, the Tigers' favor here, aside from the chip on the shoulder, you've got the head-to-head Heisman Trophy battle going on here. Last year, Deshaun Watson finished third behind Derrick Henry and Christian McCaffrey. Now he's running behind Lamar Jackson this football season here. Out of nowhere, he's running behind Lamar Jackson. I think this is a huge contest for Clemson here, and I think it's a statement-making game for them. I like the Tigers to take down the Cardinal.
And you know Dabo Sweeney's going to play the disrespect card. He might be a very religious man, but don't tell me he doesn't know that they're two-point underdogs.
He knows for sure they are. Yes,
yeah,
he does.
He knows for sure they're two-point underdogs in this game. Clemson, as you mentioned, 35-2 the last 37, riding an 18-game home streak right now. And you know, Deshaun Watson, he's been good. He's leading into victories, but the defense has been great. To me, that's the difference. I know the Vill have a nice defense, but I think Clemson on their home field, they will be able to slow down and contain Lamar Jackson, and this will be the coming out party 2.0 for Deshaun, that he lets everyone know that, you know, hey, I'm still here right now. Clemson as a whole aren't getting a lot of respect as a team.
Not at all, Gabe. This is a team last year that played for the national championship.
Yeah, look, they're fifth in the polls. It says it all. They're behind Louisville and Michigan and Ohio State.
And what have they done wrong this year? Nothing. They just haven't been maybe perhaps as impressive as Louisville has, but the football team still continues to win games, and they've only coughed up 7 points in their last two football games coming into this game as well. So defense is all there for them. They held 11 of their last 18 opponents to season-low yards. They can play. Dabo Swinney will have his football team ready.
All right, so we told you guys, go to playbook.com. It's a must-read, a wealth of information, statistical databases, and trends, courtesy of Mark Lawrence. But Mark's also one of the coverage experts. Mark, we got about a minute left out of here. Dolphins, Bengals, you got a free play up over at Covers Experts, the website right now that's up, liking this game to go under the number. And I'll tell you what, you know, everyone watched what they saw last week with Miami, and I know a lot of people are betting Cincinnati blindly here, laying the 7. I'm not in love with the fish, but the number's too high. And as your database shows us here, you know, Miami Dolphins, 8-1 straight up, 9-0 against the spread the last 9 versus the AFC North. And the Bengals, you know, they're kind of clawless right now. They got problems. They can't run the ball. They can't stop the run. And they can't protect their quarterback. That's a lot of fundamentals that usually Cincinnati are good at.
You know, my database also, Gabe, Game 4, National Football League, 1-2 favorites. Teams that are just one win in Game 4 favored. Just 58-85 to the spread. So those teams do not perform well in roles like this. I think Miami, in that after that embarrassing win over the Browns last week, because it's a game they shouldn't have won, I think they go out and make amends here. I don't say they pull the upset, but I think this game plays right down to who scores last.
Mark Lawrence's playbook.com. Go there right now, and it's available on your mobile device. Go to the Google App Store. Thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us, Mark.
Hey, my pleasure, Gabe. Enjoy the games. Be good.
There's Mark Lawrence with us. We'll continue talking football. Emery Hunt joins us. Cam Stewart joining him in studio. All that and more coming up. Game Time Decisions live on the Fantasy Sports Network and, of course, now on the Fantasy Sports Network radio networks as well, simulcast on various AM radio stations, but ultra popular right now on iTunes. So go and check that out. You can listen to all the programming 24 hours a day wherever you are with the Fantasy Sports Network radio app. And you can hear great conversations like the one I'm about to have right now with Football Game Plan's Emery Hunt. He's been joining us every Wednesday. Emery, always a pleasure, my man. How you doing?
Doing all right, Gabe. Appreciate you having me on.
All right, so let's jump right in here so we can talk about as many games as possible. But let's start off with the AP Top 25, Alabama, Ohio State, Louisville, Michigan, and Clemson. And now we got Wisconsin who's cracked the top 10. So, you know, man, what a great week, isn't it, Emery? Week four, week four in the NFL, week five college football. You know, business is starting to pick up on the gridiron right now. And we've got all these top 10 battles, almost playoff eliminators, I think it's safe to say.
Absolutely. And one big one is tomorrow night when Stanford and Washington meet up, or Friday night, I'm sorry, because that's a big game, because I believe it is, you know, Washington is one of those teams that no one wants to play. And they kind of remind me of those early 90 Washington Husky teams where they had a lot of speed on both sides of the ball and both lines of scrimmage. They were very strong, athletic, and active.
You know, I'll tell you what, the Washington Huskies are one of the trendiest teams in Las Vegas right now. Like, you know, they opened up in the 30, 35 to 1 range. Then it was like, you know, 15 to 1. Then it's 12 to 1. Then it's 8 to 1. You know, they're buying in. There are people betting and buying in that the Washington Huskies are going to make it to the Final Four and then actually win once they get there. I think that's a little bit ambitious, you know, but you got it. It's a classic case, man. Stanford, Shaw makes a living getting disrespected. And here they are once again. You know, Ryan Burns got to go in there and win on the road. It's going to be a tough contest. They played at home, Stanford, so far. What's your take on that game?
I like Washington. I think Stanford has been flirting with a loss all season long. And when you look at a team like UCLA giving them problems, and you combat that with the fact that they got beat up front, which is rare for a Stanford team to do, especially defensively. So I think when you look at the Huskies in this game, I think they match up very well on the perimeter up front, and they have a dynamic quarterback in Browning. So I think they will pull off the win. I wouldn't call it an upset because I just think they're a better team.
Yeah, you know what? We saw that last week. You're right. A road game, albeit in California at the Rose Bowl. But people look at the final score and go, oh, yeah, Stanford beat UCLA. But anyone who watched that game knows, you know, Stanford, that final score was one of the most least indicative final scores ever of actually how the game went. All right, so let's talk about, you know, the game. You know, I was talking, we were just calling it the game of the century earlier, but the game of the year so far this year with Louisville at Clemson. Most of our guests that have joined us throughout the week, if not all of them, have said they like Clemson in this game. Who do you like?
I like Louisville because I look at Louisville's defense. They're athletic, and that's not just along the defensive line. That's in the, at the second level. They can play multiple fronts. They're aggressive in the secondary. And on the flip side, I think their receiving core actually has the advantage over that Clemson secondary. And I think that's where the battle will be won. You have two tremendous quarterbacks, two guys that I think will be Heisman Trophy finalists, and two terrific players. But you also look at who can run the football very well. That, to me, falls in line with Louisville. You also look at who can stop the run very well. I think that both teams do a good job in stopping the run. But I think Louisville right now looks like Clemson last year. So I think the Cardinals win this game.
That's an interesting comparison, comparing them to what Clemson were last year. Lamar Jackson's getting all the mainstream media hype. When it comes to college football, it's always about the quarterback and the running back. But you alluded to the Cardinal defense. 15 sacks on the season, 34 tackles behind the line of scrimmage. Louisville's run defense, they're only giving up 3 yards per rush. And, you know, yeah, I know that Marshall had a backup quarterback, but nevertheless, you know, Marshall have an efficient offense. The Florida State Seminoles have an efficient offense. You know, Clemson, Syracuse, you know, an efficient offense, not a great team. So, you know, Louisville's defense for real. But so is Clemson's defense. And I think Clemson, you know, Clemson just don't get any respect for one reason or another. People aren't impressed with what Clemson have done so far this year, Emery.
I was more impressed with what they did last week versus Georgia Tech. That's a very tough offense to play. And they really shut down the Yellow Jackets. Normally that game would be close, but that game wasn't really even in question because of how well the Tigers played defensively. So I was more impressed with how they played the option because, again, not a lot of teams can match up with that on a short week. They did so very well and shut down Georgia Tech.
Yeah, just for the record, the Clemson Tigers, they're third ranked in the country against the pass. They're 15th ranked against the run and they're third in the country in points allowed. So it's amazing. You got two stout defenses. You got the total for this game, Emery, 67.5. Because, you know, you got so much speed here on the field. Like, but I'll tell you, and you know this, the last two times these two teams have played, there have been lower scoring games. Defense have taken center stage.
Well, because you look at both teams, they're very similar. They mirror one another. So I think that's why you're going to see a low scoring close game.
Yeah, it's interesting. Somebody brought that up. We had a guest on earlier in the week, and he said, you know, a lot of teams when they prepare for Louisville, they have a problem because you can't practice for Lamar Jackson. There's no one on your scout roster. There's no one that can set that up. Yet Clemson have Deshaun Watson. You know, so that they're playing against the quarterback of the same caliber and speed, etc., as they're going to face in a Lamar Jackson. All right, different style of quarterback, but I know NFL scouts love this guy, and I'm talking about Davis Webb of Cal. I watched that game last week against ASU. Webb was on fire, but he hit a wall, man, with about 6 minutes left. Turned the ball over, got a little frustrated, but the kid's got a hell of an arm. Like, he wants to show people that he's not a system quarterback, that he's an NFL guy, and I think he will be. And this Cal team, I think, are a pretty good team for 2-2. They fell apart late last week, but they're a dangerous team. This is a tough spot for Utah.
Well, you look at Davis Webb and what he does well. He can really fire off on those short to intermediate routes. And if he wants to be known for more than an air raid passer, he has to become more of a passer, not a thrower. I think a lot of times you see him just throw the football and not really pass the football with some touch or some accuracy. And I think that's why they struggled late in that ball game versus Hawaii in the opener. And that's why they struggled last week. So I think if he wants to take that next step, we have to see a wide array of passes from him against a very tough Utah defense. This is another team that I think is being very underrated. If Washington is being underrated right now, Utah is definitely being underrated. And this is a team that has been very good for, you know, the entire Kyle Whittingham tenure there, because they've been very good defensively, very good in the secondary, and on offense, they are well-balanced, and they have a very good quarterback this year that doesn't turn the ball over.
Yeah, Williams did a nice job on the final drive last week. I had money on Utah last week. I was having a heart attack. I'm yelling at the team. I'm yelling at the screen. Run the ball. But they exploited a weak spot in the middle of the field against that Trojan defense. But it was so close. There were a couple of picks. Whatever could go wrong for UFC on that drive did. Remember, you know, the DB's shoe fell off. Like, it was one thing after another. But, you know, you're right. Utah are an underrated football team. Who do you like in this game? You think Utah go? Like, Utah are much more solid. They don't make mistakes like Cal does. You figure that Utah should be able to run the ball down their throats.
I like Utah in this game. I think defensively, they just smother you, and they really make you be efficient, and they make you be well protective of the ball. You can't afford any mistakes against Utah, because on the flip side, their offense can chew up the clock. So I like Utah in this game.
All right. Before we talk some pro football with Emory Hunt, last game, a game that not everyone's going to be talking about, but they should be, because we're talking about undefeated teams here. And Calhoun's Falcons are real good this year. I was high on Air Force coming into the season. A big road win for them last week. They get a win and a cover on the road, which is impressive. Battle of military academies here with Navy and Air Force. Air Force are 7.5-point favorites in this football game. What's your take on this military battle?
Well, I like Navy to win, but I'll tell you why Air Force is a very tough matchup for anyone, because outside of the fact that they run a triple option, what makes them unique is that they actually can throw the football, and they do a great job of throwing the football, more so than Navy or Army does. And when you look at their receiver, outstanding, Robinette, big-time receiver, a big, tall guy, 6'5", he's making those big plays down the field. But I just think defensively, Navy is a lot better, especially within the front seven. So I think they're well-equipped to slow down this offense enough to where they can steal a few possessions away and put the ball back in their own outstanding offensive attack.
Calling an outright upset, man. It's going to pay nice on the money line, and you're getting 7 points if you guys want to take the Naval Academy. All right, so unfortunately, we've only got about 90 seconds here, Emory. Dolphins and Bengals. Everybody's really down on the Dolphins after they squeezed by the Browns. The Bengals have problems, man. People don't realize this, but the Bengals, they have a real hard time protecting the quarterback. But with that being stated, I don't know if a team's played a tougher first three games than the Bengals, going to New York and then getting the Steelers and then the defending Super Bowl champion Broncos.
Yeah, I think the Bengals win this one. I think we're finally going to see their running game get going against this Dolphins defense. I think they're going to make it more of an East-West game and slowly win versus Miami. It's going to be a low-scoring, close one because it's a Thursday night game and they're going to be sloppy. But I do think the Bengals will win at home.
All right, Emory, we got to get out of here, unfortunately, already. It's always a pleasure talking pigskin with you, man. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, Gabe.
There's Emory Hunt with us. Take a quick break. Raging Redhead Cam Stewart joins me next. Game Time Decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network continues. It's been a couple of weeks. So, in other words, it's been too long since the raging redhead Cam Stewart has joined us in studio. Cam, it's always a pleasure. How you doing?
Doing pretty good, Morenci. I'm not going to lie. It was a fantastic trip to Niagara Falls, New York. And I'll tell you about something about Canada. Our liquor prices are out of control. In the States, everything's 3-for-1, baby. It's fantastic. The casino, the felt was hot. But I'll tell you one thing, Morenci. I really worked them down at the outlet mall. I got the military discount.
Well, first, I was going to ask you about your attire, but fill us in on the military discount.
Well, sometimes when you're shopping for your woman, things get pretty expensive. So, you know, we want to go to the guest store. So I'm like, you know, I already get to buy her a pair of shoes. It's the birthday. Then we got the purse. Gabe, you know what it's like when you're taking a lady to these fine places like Vegas. After a while, my pockets are getting a little empty. So I gave the guy a sob story. Listen, buddy, I'm losing $30 off the top being a Canadian. That's my first problem. You know, getting beat down with liquor prices. I'm getting killed in Niagara Falls. So help me, help me, help me. And then he talked to his manager, and basically I took every single angle with this guy, got 25% off plus the 40% off military discount, two pairs of shoes for under $50, designer in Canada, over $200.
Yeah, because I was actually a little bit worried here that you actually went in and told him you were a war hero.
Yeah, no, I'm no war hero.
Like, I was like, you know, this is bad. Like,
no, I'm not saying.
I got the military discount.
I served in the Canadian Army in Kabul. No, yeah, I didn't. I didn't serve anywhere. I went to Cubs, Beavers, and Boy Scouts tops. So, just give me the discount.
So you actually just told the guy, you got to help me out, and they came up. They said, all right, we'll
desperation. We'll said military discount for our Canadian friends.
And I got to be honest with you, I noticed that, Cam. Yeah, you got a new shirt, you got new jeans, new shoes. So what I was gonna ask,
these
treated you well. You hit the outlet mall.
I know, Morenci, you had your own designer jean line. I went to this place called True Religion, never even heard of it. Some chick at the McDonald's tells me, oh, they're hip, whatever. Anyway, they took $100 off the bill, so I really don't care. I walked out of there, Morenci. No, the best thing though, when you go to customs, I had 7 bottles of vodka, way too many clothes. I got this Nautica shirt for $14, 75% off. So I'm scared, and I look at the guy, I go, I owe you $10, because I saw a sign, but it said 10,000, 10,000 if you're bringing guns, ammo, and all sorts of other crap. So I start to get nervous. He goes, no, dude. He goes, you're going to owe me 10,000 if you got any bad stuff in your car. And I'm kind of like shaking. I got nothing. And then he let me right all the way through. But I'll tell you something, a little laughter at the border will get you a long way.
Yeah, sometimes.
But some of those guys don't want to laugh.
No.
Like, you got to be real careful when you play your cards.
All right. So speaking of playing your cards, let's jump into the Ryder Cup before we get
let's
to some NFL
it.
Football. And I don't know what the hell happened here, man. It's like a spider climbed into my eyeball here or something like that. Like,
it's funny you mention that. I've had big problems with my eyes too lately. Like, I've been waking up. They're all puffy.
Something happened to me in the last segment. Like, I didn't even notice, like, in the middle. I was like, something like, I don't know, man. There's like birds that give birth up here.
I got to be honest with you.
I don't even know anymore.
They haven't cleaned the rafters in a while.
No.
You got to get a Swiffer up there.
No. And it actually happened to me the other night, a little off topic, but it happened to me the other night. I was in my bed, and I was capping some football games.
Yeah.
And I felt something on my forehead, and it was a spider. It was a big spider crawling down the middle of my bald head. And I sort of like, I didn't really even football that much. I sort of just like flicked them off, and he landed on like a pillow. He just like stared at me. And I'm thinking like, what am I, Spider-Man? Like, what the hell is going on here? And like, I swear, I'm walking down the street, I got spider webs on me. Like, I am Spider-Man. Like, I can, you know, except I can't, you know, I can't spin any webs or climb walls.
No offense, Morenci. I don't know like how the last time we sanitized our places, but I've seen everything. Earwigs, spiders, whatever. It's a dog's breakfast.
No, my balcony, I have a ton of spiders out there, and I'm a nice guy, contrary to popular belief, and I don't want to kill them.
Exactly.
Plus, they handle the other insects.
That's true.
But the problem is they've invaded my house, man. And like, they're all over the place. And it's driving me crazy, man. It's like I think I have spiders all over me all the time. All right. Ryder Cup.
Yes, Ryder Cup.
All right. USA minus 175, Europe plus 188, draw 12-1. USA more experienced, higher ranked players.
Mm-hmm.
Yet really in past years, almost been automatic. You just take the Europeans plus the money.
Yeah, you know what, Morenci? I think you got to look to Europe too at plus 170. It offers a lot of value right there. And you talk about it, Henrik Stenson, a guy that you love, Morenci, a guy that you take in your golf picks, by the way. He did really good at the end of the season. 3-0 paired with Justin Rose last year. So we talk about him. Who's the hottest golfer in the world? Rory McIlroy. He came in there in the Tour Championship and got it done. Eagles out on 16, then beats down Moops and Kevin Chappell in the playoffs, right? So here's the thing. You got two of the hottest guys in the world. You're getting Europe at plus 170. I do have one issue with the European squad. Thomas Peters, sure, he was good on the European tour, and Fitzpatrick and Chris Wood. How the hell is Paul Casey not on the European team? The guy finished his last events second, fourth. He's one of the best players next to Rory, Gabe. He's the hottest player in the world. He had to be there.
What about Bubba Watson not being on the Americans?
I don't care about that one as much. Paul Casey is actually a golfer in true great form, and he should have been on that list. If you're looking for value, though, Gabe, and we always are, some sleepers that might actually do you well, top points, you could look at Rafa Cabrera-Bale. He was fantastic for Europe, the Spaniard, all year in golf, 20-1. And Brooks Koepka, he's an American rookie. He's 20-1. If him and DJ get together, they will be out-driving their opponents by 50 yards every shot.
This could potentially be an epic Ryder Cup.
I think it's going to go down to the last match.
Yeah, you know, well, we could have potentially what? Spieth versus Rory?
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah, you know, maybe a a Dustin Johnson versus
Rory.
Or Stenson.
Yep.
And a guy that we know, you know, it's well regarded as far as his major play, but dude steps up in these situations, Sergio Garcia, right?
Yeah, Sergio Garcia is a guy that when you're watching him, you're like, what are you going to do? You can't take him in the Masters. You can't take him in any other tournament because he's going to let you down. But when it comes to international competition, this guy loves to get it done. Henrik Stenson's record speaks for itself, and you can't bet against Rory McIlroy. Too much value with Europe. Sure, America is a little bit deeper, but on the top end, as Morenci mentioned, the top three and four players for Europe are much better than the Americans.
Yeah, so ultimately you're going to take the underdog?
Yeah, I will take the underdog, Gabe. Well worth a sprinkle.
Weather's not going to be a factor, actually, at all. It's not even windy.
Nope. And Patrick Reed, if you're looking for an American top guy to get the most points, Patrick Reed lives for these situations at 11-1. Watch out for him.
All right, let's talk some NFL football.
Yep. I love it.
We've got the Miami Dolphins and the Cincinnati Bengals. The Bengals are 7-point favorites. The total's 44.5. Of course, this is the Thursday nighter, Cam. Everybody's like, oh, did you see the Dolphins play against the Browns? They're going to get killed against the Cincinnati.
Yeah, did you see Cincinnati play against Denver? Their secondary didn't look too good, did it, Gabe?
No, their offensive line didn't look good. Their secondary didn't look good. I talked about it earlier in the program, Cam. You look at the Cincinnati Bengals. They can't stop the run, they can't run the ball, and they can't protect Andy Dalton. Other than that, everything's okay.
Yeah, great
point.
And
even their pass defense, they're ranked like 18th or something like that against the pass. You know, the Bengals should win this game. Miami were a train wreck, but I got to tell you, I'm not in a hurry to be laying 7 points.
No, I'm not in a hurry to lay 7 points. I actually see value with the Miami Dolphins in this game. Trust me, Gabe, I learned the hard way last week. The Cincinnati Bengals were on all my tickets. I made some smart moves, like betting the Buffalo Bills against Arizona and Philadelphia, and I seem sharp. No, I'm actually dull, very dull, because I put Cincinnati everywhere like a complete stooge. I've been gambling for so many years, and I can don't put all your eggs in one basket. The Bengals' defense stinks. Adam Jones, you were absolutely awful in that game. You made Trevor Siemian look like the next coming of John Elway. You sucked. And I'll tell you something, Cincinnati. Other than that first drive, you're not a very good football team. You're very overrated. A.J. Green seems to be the only threat, Morenci. I think the Bengals are more like pussycats. I'd actually look to take points with the Dolphins. Screw Cincinnati.
What about Cincinnati for a survivor pick?
Never. I'd go with honestly, I'd rather take Washington over Cleveland. And people are like, they're scared about that one. Don't worry. The line, the way it's gone down, I think Washington will get it done.
All right, the Raiders and the Ravens. The Ravens are quietly 3-0, albeit they've beaten Buffalo.
Yep.
They've beaten the Browns and they've beaten the Jags. This is going to be their toughest test yet. The Raiders are sort of like ordering from Swiss Chalet.
Yep.
You don't know what you're going to get. Sometimes it's really good. Sometimes it's a little undercooked.
You're right, Morenci. Kind of like the Tim Hortons in Liberty Village. You know what I mean? I live in Mississauga where I have old veterans making the coffee and pastries to perfection
you
every
and
morning.
The vets in the military.
And then I come here and I'm like, wow, that coffee was awful. It tasted like Dasani. It was just disgusting. And I'll tell you another thing. You're right. The Oakland Raiders are a Jekyll and Hyde team. You never know what you're going to get with these guys. But Carr, he's been pretty good. He's got some good relationships with the receivers. But I'm not so quick. You know what? Baltimore is one of those
Raiders
teams.
Raiders are giving up 26.3 points per game.
That's what I'm saying.
How about Joe Flacco? 21 consecutive completed passes last week. The Ravens defense only giving up 14.7 points per game.
I am laying it down with Baltimore at -3. I think actually the Raiders are too inconsistent to take my money. I think the Ravens keep on rocking.
All right, let's talk about a game and a team that really screwed me over hard.
Oh, yeah.
You guys screwed me hard. And this is the New York Jets. And the Jets and the Chiefs said, you know, Cam, all the so-called sharps, all the Jets are the play.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why would the Jets be the play at Arrowhead here? with the Chiefs coming off a loss.
Yeah.
Why would that be to play? So I didn't take the Jets. But what did I do? You know when you're in that sort of panic?
Yeah, the panic teaser.
Yeah.
Actually, it's so funny. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, the panic teaser.
Did it.
And it's like 4:23. And like, you know, it's so things are going so bad for you.
Yep.
You're waiting to be refunded for one of the few bets you won earlier in the day. And then basically you look and you're like, I got 2 minutes and I got to spray this action around. And I did it. I was like 200 Jets plus 10 and a half Colts on a teaser. And the Colts, of course, on the teaser was great. And all I got to do is lose by 10.
Yep.
And Ryan Fitzpatrick throws six interceptions. So it's really hard to say this, but the Jets are the play this week.
You said it, Morenci. What are you going to do? And by the way, I was on a worse teaser than you. I was on a 14-point. Ooh, you can't lose that teaser. I'm like, and I'm watching Ryan Fitzpatrick throw pick after pick after pick. You know what? You know, been gambling for a long time when you don't smash dishes, you don't throw things anymore, you don't yell so your neighbor could hear. I just stood there in silence, had a horrible dinner. Like, you know, I didn't even have the Kraft dinner. It was the PC brand white cheddar. It sucked. And I had a flank steak in there. I probably paid about $1.40 for. And I just sat there and ate. Where's the vegetable? I was looking for something. And you know what? I said, I bet on the stupid Jets. But Morenci's right. This is Seattle with Boykin. Hey, Russell Wilson's out. Jets at home. Seattle traveling west to east in a situation where you go, oh my God, the Jets looked so bad last week. What do we know about the NFL? Things change on a dime. Jets outright in this game. I love them at +3 if you can get it. I'm telling you, Morenci, Seattle does not travel well to New York, and the Jets' defensive line might end Boykin's career too. Seattle's offensive line, worst in the league.
All right, we got to get out of here, Cabby. You feel the same way about Tampa Bay and Denver because everyone's like, Tampa Bay suck. Yeah,
Tampa.
Going to kill him.
Take Tampa or nothing. Tampa or nothing. Bait line. Trap.
The Raging Redhead, Cam Stewart, everybody. Great stuff as always. We come back with our plays of the day. All right, it's time for our plays of the day. It's a baseball night. We'll get back to the football grid tomorrow. Baseball playoffs around the corner. We got the World Cup of Hockey tomorrow as well. But first things first, let me just say, I'm a stupid idiot. How come we're not just betting on the Baltimore Orioles to go under every night? You remember a couple of weeks ago, they were like 13-2 to the under in a 15-game run? Now they're in the midst of a 10-0 run to the under. And oh, it can't go under tonight because Liriano's on the hill. Liriano's actually been good. Give me the Blue Jays and give me the under in this baseball game tonight. The Mets and the Marlins has been an emotional series in Miami for obvious reasons. I think the Mets get back on track. They won last night. I think they win again tonight. We're going to lay the 20 cents against the Marlins, who I think have to be suffering from a very, very emotional toll right now. And we wrap it up with the Twins and the Royals. The Royals are done, but the Royals have pride. Ned Yost is insane. So they're going to play to the final whistle, so to speak. And the Minnesota Twins, they've lost 16 of their last 18 road games. Short price, give me the Royals. Other night, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.